Hello and welcome to ETY Podcast, Voices on the World of Work. I'm your host, Bianca Luna Fabris, and in this episode, we will be focusing on the findings stemming from our Internet and Platform Work Survey. I have the pleasure of having with me today two of the authors, Jandra Kopuli and Wouter Spiesen. In the show notes, you'll be able to find the publication that is stemming from the survey that has been co-written by two of our guests together with Agnieszka Piasna. Hi to you both and welcome. And perhaps you would like to start with a very simple question. So what is this survey? What is it about? And I don't know if Wouter, you would like to jump in first.
Yes, I'd be very happy to. Thanks very much for having us over to speak on this new survey. So in this survey, it started with the first wave, and it's the first attempt to really take a fully random sample of European working age people and look at what the prevalence is of internet work and platform work across Europe. So we go much into technical detail in the paper about why it's necessary to do this survey the way we do it. But the main reason for the way we do a survey and why this is important, and we are able to, through that method, get a really good idea of how extensive the spread of internet and platform work is across Europe, and then who does this type of work, which is important because it's been a lot in the news and there's a lot of debate. And actually, a lot of the time, we're guessing just how impactful it is, how many people use it, and how much it's growing over time.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Wouter. Do you have anything to add here, Jan?
Yeah, actually, it's the motivation for this for doing this survey was that we had a number of estimates on the extent of platform work or how many people earn money on the internet, and they varied quite widely. So for individual countries, you would have estimates which range from 1% to a couple of dozen percentages. And the reason for that was that the data quality that the estimates used often wasn't very good. Often people would just go to online sort of panels and ask people if they earn money online, which is a bit of a sort of a self-defeating project. If you think about that, so you essentially ask people who earn money on the internet, answering questions, surveys, and you ask them, "Do you earn money on the internet?" And based on the on panels of such quality, you would have estimates of the extent of platform work. And of course, there are also good studies, but these were often done in individual countries. So labor force survey, which would have very good quality of sort of methodology. But they would be they provide estimates for individual countries, and what we are sort of lacking is a good quality estimate of comparative estimate of the extent of platform work in Europe.
Sorry, I have a question here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but how many countries did you cover, and how many participants did you have in your survey?
That's a really good question, and one I should have said earlier. We're covering 14 countries. In this wave, so the first wave was 5 in Central and Eastern Europe, and now we're really making this wider, and we're looking at 14 countries across Europe, so the South, the West, and Central and Eastern Europe, not the North, and we're having around 1,750 respondents in each country.
Oh, wow, brilliant. Thank you so much.
So there's relatively many, but of course, not that many people do platform work, so you need a large enough sample to really capture.
Brilliant. Thank you so much to you both. And in this regard, I think a publication that those of you that are listening might find interesting is an old publication of the Institute by Agnieszka Piasna, and the title is Counting Gigs. And it just shows how difficult it has been up until now, up until the survey came to light, to actually count internet work and gig work. So on to our next question. I think we are in need of concrete examples. So if you could tell us who internet workers are and who platform workers are.
Yes, so we use these sort of two categories, internet workers and platform workers. And platform workers are sort of a subset or subcategory of internet workers. And an internet worker for us would be anyone who earns money on the internet. So anyone who finds clients or business online. And we sort of ask people, do you sort of find work online? And offer them a list of activities, and that includes sort of delivering food. So examples of classic sort of platform work where people deliver for food delivery apps. We ask them, well, do you do sort of click work? Do you answer sort of questionnaires online and are paid for it? Or do you rent accommodation online? That also is sort of included in our definition of in the network? Do you sell goods? And that we sort of exclude people who sell their own bicycle, you know, when it's sort of old and they don't use it. We just include people who sort of are professional sort of sellers. So it's a range of activities covering sort of services, professional services, including sort of click work, IT work, accounting, and also rental and selling.
Fabulous. Thank you. Maybe Wouter, you would like to add something about gig workers. And if you could actually name names, I think that would make it easier to understand for everyone.
Yes. So this is actually the reason we're dancing around the subject is because it's not all that simple. I will name names in a bit. But so what we're doing in this survey, as Jan has said, is we've asked people about a task to do online. And then we were trying to think of, and this is a difference also, which comes quite clearly in that working paper you mentioned by Agnes, kind of counting gigs. The definitions also tend to differ a bit because we all kind of have a really good idea of what a platform is. We'll recognize it when we see it, but it's not so straightforward to define it. So the way we've gone about this in our survey is we ask people about all these activities they do online. Have they made money through short tasks online like click work or through freelance projects, through delivering, through transport? And then for those where we know this is done, this can be done through platforms, we ask people as well, what are the names of the websites and apps you use? And then we essentially define them. So we ask people, you say you have done short tasks online to make money. What sort of app or website did you use? And they can give a whole range of answers. Based on those, we define what they do. And we there actually see large variations in the names that are given. So some we had thought of before, some we had to look up and see, is this a platform, is this not a platform? But luckily there's quite a lot of literature we can build on there. And we can see that people who did short, simple tasks, some of the more popular names, there were platforms such as Fiverr, Amazon and Canada Turk. So for remote professionals, we found that the most used were 99 Designs, 99 Freelance. For transport and driving, we found a lot of people using Uber. But for delivering food, we had Deliveroo, Just Eat, Bolt, Glovo. So there are the sort of likely examples that you'd expect. Then it's very clear it's a platform. But then there was also, and this is where the distinction between platform work and internet work becomes clear. What we saw as a platform were those where people are matched to the task. So the platform does an actual matching between the provider and the service or the task and mediates the payment. But there's a very big gray area online of people offering their services online, but through something that maybe only makes the matching easier or is like a very advanced job notice board where you can find freelance workers. This is not a platform, but it's sort of platform adjacent.
Yes, thank you. I think it's much clearer for everyone now.
I can try to summarize, you know, the long answer, to make it short. So for us, sort of platform work is internet work done through online platforms. It includes only services. So if you are renting or if you are selling products online, for us, that's internet work. But if you provide a service which is mediated through a platform, then that's a platform work. And then as Wouter sort of tried to explain, it becomes more difficult once you want to really define what a platform is. For us, it's about matching, about also mediation of the provisions. So someone has to sort of, you don't want to go, so often you don't want to sort of go online and find any stranger to do a service for you. You want some sort of guarantee that the service will be delivered under some standards. And that's what the platforms often do. They sort of provide some sort of information on the people, regulate the way the service is delivered. And then they also take care of payment. It's often difficult to sort of find the platform more precisely, but the general idea is platform workers, you provide services online and it's done through a labor platform.
Can I just add one more thing on that? Because that's really the crux of this whole division we have between the internet workers and the platform workers. And that comes to the heart of the matter of how many people do it, which we'll talk about in a second. But so we have the actual platform workers who definitely provide a service through a labor platform. And then there is this whole potential of people who do already work on the internet on things that are more or less resemble a platform. They don't all do and all have elements of platforms. But this we really see as an area that potentially could do this work later on. So it's not only the people who actually do labor platform work. It's also their potential in the form of people who already earn money on the internet.
Right. Thank you. And I think this really opens up to our following question. So how much gig and internet work is there in the European Union? How many workers are employed in these sectors?
quite large part of the population has sort of tried to do some work online. So about a third or 30% of respondents would say, well, in the past, I tried to do some internet work. So that's one extreme. And on the other extreme, if you really look at people who do platform work, platform work on a regular basis, that's quite a small proportion. So we have this category of main platform workers, who are people who either do more than 20 hours per week of platform work, or more than 50% of their income would come from platform work. And that would be about 1.1% of 1% of the working age population in Europe.
1%.
Yes.
And in last term, it's 30%, you said, right?
Yeah, so the 30% was people who have tried to do to earn some money on the internet. And then 1% is people who do platform work on the regular basis. And then we have categories in between. So then 17% of the working age population did some internet work in the past year. And 4.3% did some platform work in the past year. So these are the sort of less intensive workers. But when it comes to people who really sort of, for whom the platform work is a main, major source of income, is a sort of main, major activity, that's a relatively small proportion of the population, about 1%.
So I have a question here. So have you witnessed some sort of cross-country variation, or is there just a more general trend throughout the EU?
So it's relatively common, which struck us as well, because as Jan said initially, you had these big variations in surveys, but now because we have the same methodology, you can kind of compare more easily. But I just want to come back a little bit to these numbers. So indeed, we have about 4.3% doing platform work, which corresponds to about 12 million people across the EU. And if you then look at how many hours there are worked, that's not that little. It's 72 million hours per week that we estimate being spent on platform work of some type. But as Jan said, this is quite unequally. Many people do a bit of platform work, and then some people do really quite a lot. And that's a smaller group. Now, when we look at the differences across countries, if we again look at platform work, just this varies, but it doesn't vary a lot. So there's about 2% of people doing platform work in Romania in the last year, and this goes up to 6.5% in Ireland. We don't see a really clear geographical distribution. So in some way, the lowest four countries are all Central and Eastern European countries. So platform work is least likely in Romania, Poland, Hungary, and Bulgaria. But then it's relatively likely in Czechia, Slovakia, and Estonia. There's no clear pattern there to speak of, but there is variation across countries. And then we actually see among the group of Southern and Western European countries. So this is Spain, Italy, France, Germany, Ireland, and Greece as well. And there, the variation's quite low. They're all about this 3 to 4.5%, 4 to 4.5%.
I think
on the whole, we find a relatively stable share of people doing platform work.
I have another question for you. So who are internet and gig workers? What are their ages, more or less? Their educational level? Are they more male or female? So if you could expand on this, that would be great.
Well, maybe before going into that question, I think it's also important to differentiate between different types of platform or internet workers. So we got this range of activities from food delivery to, IT work. And what we find is also differences between, difference in prevalence between these categories. So what actually did surprise me a little bit was that we found that the remote click work and selling carousel link are the most sort of important categories in terms of how often people do that. So it's not like actually transport, which for me was like a sort of emblematic for this activities we keep talking about, taxi apps and the like. And this actually is the smallest category in this in platform internet work. So also a variation sort of between different sort of types of activities done by internet workers.
He's absolutely right. There's this. We talk about platform work because it's easier to not always have to say the whole five activities. But there's a very big variation. We see this in their age profiles, in their educational profiles, in the tasks they do, and also very much in how much they earn from it. So we'll talk about this in a bit later, but the transport workers, they're a relatively small group, but they're a group that actually, when they do it, they tend to do it relatively intensely, and often it's an extension of work they might already be doing offline. So these people are more likely to be in the transport sector.
No, but for a very ignorant person, when you say transport workers, we're talking about Uber drivers, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, so, excellent.
People who do taxi driving work.
But it's not Deliveroo food delivery.
No, those we take as a separate category, but as you would expect, in quite a lot of things, they overlap a bit.
Of course.
They're not completely different, but they are a bit different in that, as far as we see at least, this food delivery work, which is quite a big task, is more often done as an aside to other jobs and other tasks.
Okay, so supplemental income.
So people would be supplemental income. I mean, a lot of this is supplemental income, but the transport workers, the drivers, essentially, we often see that it's a sort of extension of work that might already be done. Not for all of them, but more than the other platform tasks. But we haven't talked about your previous question.
So, who are the independent workers? Usually the research would find these workers to be younger, more educated, men more active than the women. Migrants will be overrepresented. And we indeed do find this sort of profile of internet platform workers. So younger, more educated, more males, in particular when it comes to more active workers and the larger representation of migrants. But at the same time, we wouldn't sort of like to put too much emphasis on this distinctiveness of platform workers as a sort of group, because it's true that they are more younger, more educated, and also because they're younger, that's more students, but it's not kind of student job. It's we do find sort of all demographics, all groups sort of represented among the internet and platform workers. So even it's like the oldest categories that we had, the 55 to 65 years old, they would represent about 10% of internet platform workers. So you find all different kind of categories in this group. Another insight, I think, is that you also do find, the segregation or divisions that we find in offline markets reproduced also online. So I mentioned, males are among the more active workers, but we also find, categories such as sort of what we call on-site work, which also includes sort of care work, nannies and the like, that is sort of dominated by young women, often students. So and then you have this sort of what you would expect, driving is done by older people. Renting also is done by older people who would have sort of things to rent, usually property. And then delivery, often done on bicycles. Young people do these kind of things. If you would look on the sort of offline labor markets, transport would also be sort of dominated by similar kind of, the profile of transport workers would be quite similar to the profile of food delivery workers or delivery workers in general.
Excellent. Thank you, Jan. Maybe Wouter, you would have something to add here?
Yeah, that I completely agree with Jan. That this is really important because indeed we often make a bit too much of this distinctiveness of the groups, right? That it can be set away as student work, and that also means that you're kind of at allowance to not care as much about the conditions because it's just supplemental income and so on. But we see a large variety, and there are people who... it's not that distinct a group of people doing this work. And actually, I also wanted to add a bit on this, because, of course, we also looked at what people's labor market status is, so what they do essentially in their everyday life, in the jobs they do. And the main finding from this is that it's not the case that people make their money through the internet, and that's the way of people who are not working, who don't find a job, to get on the labor market. It's really... essentially, people who already are employed are the majority. So it's not more common among people who are inactive or students or unemployed, or at least not much more common. And most people who do platform work or internet work have a job as well, and often quite a precarious job. So they'll either be own account workers, self-employed, it's very likely, and quite a lot of temporary contract workers.
I think it's very important because also often you hear that, this kind of work is sort of a stepping stone into the labor market for people who are sort of more excluded or are inactive. We don't really find evidence for that. Then you would expect, these categories of unemployed or students or inactive groups to be sort of more active on platforms than the people who have other things offline. We don't really find that. If you look at the working hours, it's the people who are self-employed who are most active. It's not people who are sort of excluded categories. So it's sort of top-up activity. So it's something on the sort of side gig people would have. And actually, then it sort of opens another question. So if it's a side activity, is it sort of side activity by choice, or maybe people who are active on the platform and have it as a side activity would actually prefer to have it as a more substantial activity? This question we sort of can't answer with the data we have, but there's plenty of other research also done by done at EDUI, which shows that on most platforms, or in general platform work, the situation is that you have sort of more people chasing tasks or jobs than the work that is being offered. So for me, I think the conclusion that I make from the data that we have is that this is a side activity, but often not by choice. It's because people often many would prefer to earn more money through these activities, but the work is just not available.
Okay, so I would like to shift the focus more specifically on working time and wages. So how many hours do gig and internet workers actually work, and how much are they paid?
So essentially, it's relatively little on the whole. When we look at the platform workers, there's a huge spread, and average earnings are about 400 euros for a remote professional. For instance, that's the highest earning. But then if you only look at, that's really pushed upward by some people who make a lot of money on it. So the median platform worker earns between 50 and 200 euros per month. And that's generally less than 10% of the annual income. So just to put those numbers in, just to make sense of that, it's relatively little. It's a bit extra on the whole. Some people make a lot.
Yeah, so for instance, to add examples. So click worker, for them, a medium income would be 50 euros per month. Delivery worker, 100 euros. Transport worker, so your taxi driver, a little bit more, 130 euros. But that may actually include also, they may not take into account the costs they have, which for, if you drive taxi, that's quite a lot that you have to pay for petrol and, maintenance of your car. For a small group of professionals, they may earn substantial sort of amounts, but the overall picture is rather sort of low income. And Walter actually did an exercise that he compared the what we've observed as a sort of hourly earning with minimum wage. And it seems that about 50% of workers just don't even earn the local minimum wage.
And that's the takeaway. Yeah? It's really relatively low. There's variation between the platform workers and the freelance workers earn a lot or earn more than the rest. But on the whole, if you look at the hours put in, which is on for the median worker, again, 5 to 6 hours, the earnings become quite low.
Okay, so forgive me, but I have a devil's advocate question here. So if platform and internet workers earn so little and they only use this type of work as a form of supplementary income, then why does this have to be regulated at all?
My perspective will be different. So we have 3 million of workers for whom this is an important source of income. They do it on a regular basis. They put a large number of hours. Then we have a very large number of people who actually are involved in that activity on a more occasional sort of basis. Now, 50% of them don't earn the minimum wage, which they have a right to in their own country. So for me, this is actually a problem to be addressed. It's not like, I don't see actually the rationale of saying, well, this is not a problem. We have a substantial amount of people in Europe whose rights are delivered, who don't get the income that they sort of should get. So for me, this is actually a reason to do something about that.
I just wanted to add on this that I completely agree with what Jan is saying, and that it's also, we're talking about the average person who does platform work spends about 10 hours per week on it. So that's the average. But this hides a substantial group of people for who this is the main income, and they might not have many other options. We're talking about 20% of people who do driving work through platforms. So think of Uber, for instance, as the most recognizable there, but we don't know the income per platform in this case. So, and 20% of those people doing transport work make more than 3/4 of their annual income through the platform. So while for most people, it's a supplementary thing, for a group of people, and we're still talking quite a large number of people in total, this is a really important part of their income, and this is their job. And it should not be a sort of no man's land that's not regulated, where all of a sudden minimum wages don't count.
The point I want to add is that another problem that we have here is that we know from the offline labor markets that if you have a group that sort of undercuts competition by, for instance, not paying the minimum wage, it puts pressure on the rest of the sector, which would then struggle to compete through legal means by paying workers what they are eligible for by employing them rather than sort of paying them low wages. A good example, I think, is restaurants. So in countries where it's sort of tolerated that restaurants can pay workers sort of envelope wages, that puts pressure on the employers who would rather actually follow the law, employ workers And you know, if you allow the sort of if you allow some to undercut competition, that it's difficult for the rest of the other companies to compete by sort of following the law. So I think it's, you know, that's another sort of problem that we have with this segment.
If you don't mind, I actually would like to focus on something different. So moving on to your publication, having a bit more of a European flair. So we all know that a Euro directive on platform work has been released in early December, just before Christmas. So maybe Jani would like to take this question and tell us a little bit of in terms of what is happening at the European Parliament and how things are going.
Well, we have the draft directive from the European Commission. We just sort of, the EU level, the process works in a way that the European Commission sort of puts a proposal, just a proposal to the European Parliament and the European Council. So we have this proposal now with the Parliament and the Council, and that sort of tries to do three things. The first thing is there's an effort to make sure that the legal status or the employment status of platform workers is correctly classified. And that is, the proposal is to do that through sort of presumption of employment. And then we can have a large debate, and we don't have time for that, whether the solution is the best one, but that the Commission proposes. But there's a proposal how to sort of make sure that the platform workers who should be employed are indeed classified as employed workers. The second goal of this directive is to make sure that the management of workers through automated algorithms is done in a fair way, so that it includes a proposal for rights in terms of having being able to appeal against a decision done by an algorithm. And the third aim of this directive is to get sort of more transparency about this segment of work by introducing the obligations, reporting obligations by platforms on who works for them, under what conditions. So that's very important because, as we see now, the big problem that we have also, also in the context where we want to address the platform works through social dialogue, through collective bargaining, it's difficult to actually get information about the working conditions and of platform workers and the prevalence of platform work.
Okay, brilliant. Let's see what's going to happen. Valter, I have a final question for you, if you don't mind. So from what I understand, the platform survey publication is just one of the publications that are coming up. So if you could tell us a little bit more about, you know, what we should expect and what you will be looking into in the next few months.
So we now have, of course, this working paper, which really outlines what we find on platform work in this second wave. But the third wave has been in the field and will receive the data. And normally by the end of spring, so late spring, we should be bringing out some more information on this new wave. So this will allow us to see if in some countries there's been a change and to have some more data just on these countries, which I think will be quite interesting. So that's on eight countries of the 14 that will be repeated. So we have a second measurement. And then we, of course, also ask some other questions in these interviews. And there will be some data and papers coming throughout this year on the other aspects we've asked about, which are, for instance, the impact of COVID on work. On whether you are doing more work online or telework. And on we're looking at trade union membership and organization, which should also make for a very interesting publication soon.
Thank you so much to Valter and Jan for having recorded this podcast episode with me today. And thank you for everyone that is still listening to the episode. You'll be able to find all of the publications that we mentioned throughout the episode in the show notes.
Thank you.